Take your Bible, if you have one. Turn to 2 Corinthians. Good to be with you guys. I really deeply, deeply respect your director, Max. I've watched his life for about 13 years now, and my respect for him really increases. And I like your staff, too, the rest of them. This is my daughter's bookmark. She loaned it to me for my trip. I don't know if she ate the top out of the thing or what, but it's a little red. Whenever I get ready to go away, she always gives me a few things to take with me to remind me of her. 2 Corinthians 10, verses 3 through 5. I'd like to pick up on these verses. Paul says, he's writing to the Corinthians, he makes a statement right here, "For we live in the world, though we live in the world, we're not carrying on a worldly war. For the weapons of our warfare are not worldly, but have divine power to destroy strongholds." And he's talking about a range of things there. I'd especially like to look at number 5. "We destroy arguments and every proud obstacle to the knowledge of God and take every thought captive to obey Christ." My topic for this evening is apologetics. And that sounds like you've done something wrong and you need to straighten it out. I always understood an apology was one of those things that you gave somebody you had done something wrong to. As I went to seminary, I discovered that word meant giving a defense for the faith that you have in Christ. I would especially would like to focus on a very narrow area of apologetics tonight. You've had different people come and speak to you over the last few years dealing with the subject of giving answers for Christ and answers about Christ. I especially would like to focus on the area of apologetics that deals with how people form beliefs and then how answering belief systems, not just answering simple questions, but belief systems. You would, if you wanted a term for it, it would be presuppositional apologetics. I don't know if you can spell that or not. Sounds like one of those terms where you ought to pull out your history book and catch up on your homework while a guy talks on it, you know. Sounds like anything but alive. But I'd like to get into this with you and spend some time there. I think you might find the area interesting. Because this stand is small, I'm going to leave my sword over here and get back to it in a few minutes if we have time to. All of us have beliefs. We have a lot of beliefs that we carry along with us. I'd like to investigate how we get those beliefs. And then especially for people who do not believe that there is a God, I'd especially like to investigate some of the problems with not believing there is a God. And you know, there are problems with believing there is a God. People have told you that, and perhaps you feel that right now. But there are also some very serious intellectual problems with not believing that there is a God. I'd like to take a look at some of those things. First, a word about me. I went to a school in East Tennessee, undergraduate, did a degree in mathematics and chemistry, was interested in a wide range of things, and made a lot of friends from different parts of the world. I had many international friends from the whole sphere of the international realm. I grew to love people from a variety of religious backgrounds and from very different philosophical orientations. I had committed my life to Christ whenever I was 7 and did fairly well up until about the middle of my college experience. Then, about the middle of college somewhere, I began to discover that my faith in Jesus Christ was being eroded. It was slowly being eaten away. And I didn't even know that, but I sort of felt it. You know, something is going on. By the time I was a senior, I had dealt with a lot of different questions, like what about evolution in the Bible? How do you put those two together? Or do you at all? And a lot of other questions. Some of them sort of ridiculous, like, can God make an object so big he cannot move it? Have you ever stayed up late at night wondering about that? I found out later that that's sort of a tautology. That's not even a serious question whenever you analyze it logically. But it sort of worried me for a while. I dealt with a lot of these ideas, you know. Time went on, and toward the end of my senior year, I was dealing with the question of, is Jesus Christ the only way? Because I had very sincere and good friends who were Buddhist and Islamic and Hindu. And some of them were committed to their faith very seriously. And that became a very viable question for me. One morning in Bible reading, I found John 14:6, which says that no man comes to the Father. Jesus says he's the way, the truth, and the life. And it is the way, not a way. The truth, not a truth. The life, not a life. And then he makes the bold statement, no man comes to the Father but by me. Well, that sort of gave me some light on the topic because I was wondering what the Bible really taught in this area. And I went out rejoicing over that. And I talked with a friend who was a lot further along than I in studies. And he said, you know, I said, I finally figured it out. Only people who commit their lives to Jesus Christ are going to heaven. He said, well, that's really a narrow view. Well, you know, that made sense to me. That was pretty narrow. And then he said, you know, you really can't make that statement because you don't know how God has revealed himself in other religions. And that sort of blew me away because I really didn't. I spent the next couple of years sort of in the dark. You know, after a while, if you have questions for so long, after a while, you stop looking for answers and you begin to look for loopholes. Well, I did that and spent a couple of years sort of in darkness and in rebellion against the Lord. The Lord opened up the door for me to do doctoral work at USC in Los Angeles. I had a sense as I left the area where I'd grown up that God was taking me there to do something in my life. By that time, I felt about God like he was someone sort of talking through about a 3-foot-thick concrete wall. And every now and then I could hear these sort of muffled rumblings, but nothing was coming through. I was very confused. At USC, I met some people who introduced me to a guy that had really done his homework in world religions and in philosophy and was very firmly committed to the scriptures. And I began to do Bible study with him. And I'd have a question, and I'd go ask him. I'd say, look, what about this question? He'd say, well, you need to read these two books. So I go home and I'd read those two books, man. I get in there and read those things. And I'd think, wow, this book has already been written, man. I've had this question for 10 years. And they wrote this 20 years before I was born. Ooh, you know, that was real revelation. I didn't know there were books that answered questions about the Christian life. As a matter of fact, one of the books that I read told me that if you go through the college experience, you normally will pick up about 13 basic questions about Christianity, attack-type questions. Some of them are analytical, but all of them have an edge to them about Christianity that you never learn to verbalize, but you do get them. So I began to do a lot of reading, began to do Bible study, and gradually began to put it together that, yes, Jesus Christ was the only way, not because God was mean, but because that really was the only way. As I did more study, a lot of the other questions began to clarify for me. I spent several years, in about 6 or 8 months, my life began to straighten out, but I spent several years studying philosophy and world religions after that. So I personally have come through a pilgrimage of trying to answer some very hard and yet very basic questions. There are a few things I've learned along the way. There are all kinds of things I haven't learned, but there are a few things I have learned. I'd like to share some of those with you, not as someone who has arrived, because I'm still learning, but as someone who struggled and has found out a few things. They might be of help to you. You know, if they're helpful to you, great. If they're not helpful to you, then go find something that is. Enjoy yourself. But I especially would like to help you in the area of dealing with some of these questions about the existence of God. First of all, how do people form beliefs? How do real people form beliefs? I mean, real, actual, real human beings. You know, theoretically, everybody ought to go off the top of the mountain somewhere and meditate and intellectually grapple and put this whole thing together. But most of us don't have that much time. Some of us can't climb mountains. And others aren't interested in mountains. And besides, you know, the Arbuckle's about as high as you go in Oklahoma. So, most of us form our beliefs another way. Rather than sitting down and intellectually working through everything, we acquire beliefs as we go along. It's cool, you know, it's really cool to act like you've thought it through and put it together. So, somebody asks a question. You're sitting down having a Coke in the cafeteria, and somebody asks a question. Well, what do you believe about the situation in the Middle East? You have never thought about it in your whole life. You've read some things on the newspaper. You've seen some things on TV. You say, well, in my opinion, this is what I think about. And you grab this shred. You heard Dad say one thing. Mom said something else. A news commentator said something last night. And once upon a time, you read a funny book. A Christian funny book had something about the Middle East in it. And so you pull all those things together and you act like you've really considered this. You know? Well, our beliefs are not usually formed so thoroughly. People get beliefs like they get measles. Measles is a key idea to remember. You get beliefs like you get measles. You get around people who've got the beliefs, And sort of later on, you end up with them. You know, you get around, somebody's got measles. And a few days later, you got these little spots in your mouth and on your hands. You know, these little spots. That's the way most of us get beliefs. We get around friends in a dormitory bull session. We sit around, we talk, and this guy's real cool, and he thinks this, and somebody else thinks something else, and someone thinks something else. And we talk around, and people we like, we sort of tend to pick up their beliefs. Professors, especially good professors, those who take you through a class experience without just boring you to death. You know, the guy who stands up there and he picks up his notes and, you know, they crumble around the edges and fall. They're so old. And you know, it's going to be a long semester, man. Well, you're probably not going to imitate his beliefs, but somebody who's pretty sharp, pretty cool, leads you through a lot of interactive kinds of learning. You know, those people are sort of cool, and you like to adopt their ideas. And especially if they like you. You know, that's important. People that like me, I mean, they've got to believe the right things. Right? We tend to respond to those very easily, and we pick up very quickly their beliefs. Rock stars, you know, that works more with preteens and early teenagers, but it still works with college students. Our favorite movies, did you see Gandhi? If you saw Gandhi, after the movie Gandhi came through, which was partially related to historical truth, but was really a movie. A good movie, I mean, it was a very dynamic movie. But after it came through, all kinds of people were running around saying, well, you know, I'm really like Gandhi. Well, I didn't study Gandhi. I just saw the movie, man. And the guy in the movie is only partly related to the historical figure, but now they're all, you know, I really feel a lot like Gandhi about this. Well, I guess so. Records, tapes. We get our beliefs like we get measles. Now, some people think through logically, but very, very, very few. As a matter of fact, if you'd like to find out who does, next time somebody pops out a big idea that they really believe about religion or whatever, ask them what their sources are. Ooh, that's dirty poo. You don't do that. You're supposed to play the game, you know, where you flop out your big idea about religion. Then you can both act intelligent. But if you ask sources, they might ask yours. But if you want to find out who's thinking through, just ask a simple question of, well, where did you get that idea? You know, what reading did you do, or you know, what study have you done? But rather than think logically, we get our measles beliefs, and then in the moment of crisis, when the question is asked, we take this shred and that shred and this rag and this rag and sew it all together into a patchwork tuxedo and wear our system of beliefs. And other people stand back in awe, you know. Wow, the man has it together. Well, you know, this is true with professors, too. I've taught college, and now, one of the things that amazed me in college was how many men had not thought through what they believed. A prof can get up and stand in front of a group just like a preacher and look really on top of it. I'm in front of you right now. Now, you can ask me my sources. You know, you can go ahead and ask me. I've got some. But a prof can get up, and he's sort of like a preacher. He's got his own pulpit in the classroom, and he can say things and act really cool and give his sermons to you. And you just, man, you're there. Wow. Except he looks probably more intelligent. You know, he's in a classroom, not a pulpit. And classrooms are identified with intelligence, and pulpits are not on TV. Right? You know, and you got to watch TV, man. Stay up. So, but profs are the same way. They collect ideas out of undergrad school and grad school. They get questions that were never answered, and then they pass on the questions. And they look cool while they do it. An example is a guy, I was a BSU director in Los Angeles. I worked with students on how to ask the right questions in classrooms. And there was an anthropology prof in this one classroom who began the year with his first sermon. And after they got the little stuff taken care of for the day, and he began into his lecture, he began really pounding this thing. You're going to have to realize, you're going to have to grow up into the real world and realize there are no absolutes. There just are none. Have you ever had an anthropology class where somebody did that? You know, cultures differ. This culture believes this. This believes this. This one does things another way. There are no absolutes. Now, I realize it's going to make you feel insecure, but you're just going to have to grow up. The guy's actually preaching a sermon. And after he said very firmly, there are no absolutes. Thad, a friend of mine, raised his hand and said, sir? And he said, yes. He said, are you absolutely sure? Hey, hey, hey. The guy just created the absolute that there are no absolutes. Isn't that interesting? Absolutely true in all cases. See, the fellow had never thought it through. He just, you know, he just heard that idea along the way, and it sounded good to him, and it looked real cool, and he was up there preaching away on it. And this one fellow just asked him an intellectual question. And his response was, well, probably there are no absolutes. At that point, his sermon fell apart, and he dismissed class. He dismissed early. Now, see, you tend to hear ideas that sort of assault you, and you tend not to evaluate them, or you don't know how to, where they come from pulpit or from, you know, classroom. You need to learn to begin to take some of these things and think through them. People get their beliefs a lot like measles. So if people begin to throw big ideas out on you, then you need to understand that many of them have not been logically thought through, and that people are expressing what they've heard. A lot of times beliefs are formed out of motives rather than thoughts. As a matter of fact, I think personally that most people tend to form their beliefs from their values, not from their intellect. It's out of their values that beliefs are formed. Most people have a motive in their beliefs about God. Huxley, philosopher in the last century, wrote this quote. I think the title of the book is Confessions of an Atheist. I read it quoted in another book. But he had this quote in his autobiography. He said, myself and my associates, it runs something like this, I'm not giving it verbatim, myself and my associates wanted certain privileges, parenthesis, that is, sexual ones, and we realized that if there were no God, there would be no basis for restraint. So we assumed there was none, and we found plenty of reasons to back our assumptions. Whenever I read that statement, I was both impressed and appalled. I was impressed that the guy was so honest. And I was appalled that anybody would claim to be intellectual whenever they really want an excuse to go to bed with somebody. Yeah, this is one of those things, just, how do you do that? So, you know, so if someone's sleeping with his girlfriend or some gal sleeping with a guy on occasion, you need to realize that their disbelief in God may not be so much because they have arrived at the intellectual conclusion there is no God, but if there is a God, then that would be a very inconvenient belief to have given the current situation. So you need to realize that. And you yourself, as you form your beliefs, most of you are committed to the Scriptures. I don't know all of you personally, but most of you are. You need to be sure that whenever you come to the Scriptures, you're not trying to get this Scripture to mean what you really feel it ought to mean just so you can go ahead and do what you really want to do. You need to let the Scriptures change you, not try to squeeze them into your own mold. But anyway, people tend to form their beliefs and their values. So many times whenever beliefs are tossed out, it's because somebody wants to do something, not so much because somebody really thinks something and they've worked it through logically. So measles and motive, and then mess. Most people's beliefs are a mess. Mine are in a state of getting unmessed. But most people take shreds of ideas for their beliefs from very different philosophical systems. There are several philosophical systems that influence the United States right now. They're pouring into you through your classrooms and through the media. There's a book called The Universe Next Door. It's on sale downstairs, I think. That one goes in very simply into the different philosophical systems on a beginning college level and outlines what they are. Theism, biblical theism is one of them. Naturalism, the idea that there is no God and all developed out of time plus chance, matter plus time plus chance. Deism, the idea that God wound it up, you know, a long time ago, and then he's off playing golf and now things are running down. He's not involved currently in the universe. Nihilism, the idea that there is no real meaning, no ultimate meaning, there is no God, there is no meaning. Existentialism, an attempt to escape that by saying, I create meanings. What is really meaningful is what has meaning to me right here, right now. There's a philosophy built around that. Eastern pantheistic monism, the basic core of Eastern philosophies that's pouring into the U.S., particularly through the movies, like Star Wars, is a part of that. And then New Consciousness. That's more in the Dungeons and Dragons end of things, and a good part of Star Wars. A lot of things that deal with sorcery. Now, these are all pouring in to the culture right now from different angles. The educational process, the movies, TV programs, newspapers, books, you know, funny books, comic books. These are all pouring in. And what people do, people just sort of go walking along, you know, and they get next to somebody that's got a New Consciousness idea, and that feels pretty good. So, you know, it gives them measles. Over here, they get next to somebody that's got a deistic idea. That one feels pretty good, you know. They come out with all kinds of different measles. Their beliefs are sort of a goulash. There are all kinds of things in the stew. They have not sat down and thought through how one idea relates to another. So you find people holding rather contradictory ideas and believing those things. We'll talk about some of those in a moment. Sort of like a Western omelet. Have you ever had one? You know, peppers and onions, maybe bacon or ham, and then a lot of egg. A little existentialism, a little nihilism, a little deism, and a whole lot of TV. And we have our belief system, our unsystematic belief system. Some examples. For instance, the student who says he's a Christian, but says that he's a behaviorist in the psychology realm. He's Skinnerian. Man basically responds to stimulus. He's a collection of machinery that responds to stimulus. The Bible says you're more than a hunk of complicated machinery. That you're a real person and you transcend time and space. So the person who tries to really get into Skinnerian psychology or a behavioristic science, whether it's psychology or not, keeps running into conflict with Christianity. And every now and then, one of these things pops up. It's a real question. They forget about it and then they go on. So people sort of run two tracks at the same time. But if you thought through both systems, you'd find they don't fit together too well at all. Matter of fact, there's a paradox, a formal paradox called the thinking behaviorist. It's a logical paradox that don't fit together very well at all. A book, if you'd like to see that, it's a book called The Limits of Science by Sullivan, who's a physicist. Or, on a practical level, the person who says, I believe that Jesus Christ is Lord. I believe he really is God, he really is Lord of heaven and earth, and I'm going to live for my career. Now, most are not that crass. I'm going to serve God in my profession, and that means get richer and richer and richer, no matter what it costs the kingdom. You know, those are two different tracks. You can't run on both. Back to something more philosophical. I had a discussion once with a guy named Jim who wanted to discuss Christianity. I found out that he wanted to argue it. And I didn't really want to do that. But he began to attack. So I asked him some questions, found out Jim was engaged to a gal, and a gal that he cared a lot about. He told me that there was no God. He didn't believe there was a God. I asked him what he thought man was. He said, well, man, he's Skinnerian, man is just basically a complicated biochemical machine. And he goes through life. He has hunger pain, so he eats. He responds to light stimuli and feelings, touch. He responds to touch stimuli. He interacts with people based on a very complex response to a complex set of stimuli. And that's what man is. So I asked him about his relationship with his girlfriend, and he said he really cared about her. She really cared about him. As a matter of fact, he felt she cared more about him than he did about her. So I asked him if he had ever told her that he loved her. He said yes. As a matter of fact, he had slept with her several times, and that he told her he loved her, and that I asked him, she responded to that. He said yes. And then I asked him, I said, what do you understand what you're saying? With your belief about man, do you understand what you're saying about love? He said, well, what do you mean? I said, well, you're saying man's a biochemical machine, aren't you? Yes. And that's it. I mean, that's it. Dead, you know, take it to scrap heap. It's just a machine. Right, right. And all that man does is respond to a set of stimuli. Right, right. So whenever you are in her presence and, you know, she turns you on, all these feelings of love are coming up, then at that point, you're responding to the stimulus of her being present and certain things about her, aren't you? He said, yes. And I said, and that's it. You're just responding to these stimuli. He said, yes, that's right. I said, what you're saying is that whenever you say to her, I love you, what you say to her when you say I love you is on the same order as saying I itch or I've got to go to the bathroom. And he got mad at me. But it's true. It's true. Just a response to a complex set of stimuli. He said, well, so what if it is? I said, next time you tell her I love you, I said, why don't you tell her that means as much to you as I itch, or that's on the same line with you as I itch, or I've got to go to the bathroom. And he looked at me, and you know, he sort of glared at me. I said, you won't do that because she won't go to bed with you anymore. And I said, will she? He said, no, she wouldn't. I said, well, you know, your belief that man, that there is no God and man's merely a machine has a lot to say about your love relationships. And you see, this thing of mess is true. We sort of, we got all these different ideas running around. We don't sort them out. The guy who says that evil is merely a category, you know, I don't know if you've heard that or not, but there is no real true evil. Evil is just a name we give to a certain set of circumstances. Yet, who really gets into heroes like Luke Skywalker out fighting evil and stuff like that, he's running on two different tracks. If there is no evil, there are no heroes. You know, maybe that's not completely logical, but it's real close to it. If there is no evil, you're going to have a hard case building. You have a hard time building a case for heroes. But we don't think about that. Well, I don't believe evil is just a category. Oh, man, get the Death Star. Ooh, there you are, machine. We just go our merry way. There are problems with not believing there is a God. That's the second thing. There are what certain ways we form beliefs, like measles. There are problems with not believing there's a God. There are intellectual problems with not believing that there, not only that there's a God, but that the God who is the God of the Scriptures. Infinite, personal, and triune. There are some real intellectual problems. I'm not going to go into all of them, but I'd like to look at some of them with you. You see, people object to Christianity because it is not logical. I was told that over and over and over again. You got to blow your brains out to be a Christian. You're not logical. You're just sort of off in another world. Actually, there is a good case, evidentially, for the reality, the death, and the resurrection of Jesus Christ. There's a good case for that. Now, it's not proof because it's historical data. It's not proof in the scientific sense of the laboratory where you prove that water boils at 100 degrees centigrade by boiling it at 100 degrees centigrade. Now, the thousandth time that you boil it at 100 degrees centigrade, it reads 100 degrees centigrade. So, water boils at 100 degrees centigrade. You don't rerun history. You look at the results of events in the past, and they give you conclusions about the past. So you don't rerun Napoleon. Let me show you. Napoleon really is real. We're going to rerun him 1,000 times right here. Everybody can see. Doesn't work that way. But you look at the evidences that have come from the past, and you draw conclusions about it. There's a good evidential case for Jesus Christ. I found out that logically there is a good case. It won't drive you to the wall, but it's a good case. But not to believe in God, the God of the Scriptures, also has problems. If there is a problem with believing God, not to believe in God has a few more problems, actually. Because beliefs are tied together. That's why. Beliefs are tied together. If you don't believe in God, beliefs are sort of like a fishnet. You know, there's a fishnet and it's got all these knots and everything there. You get hold of one knot and you run your fingers out along the lines, you hit another knot. And you run your fingers down here and you hit another knot. Beliefs are tied together like that. If there is not a God, there are some other conclusions that are logically tied to that that may be hard to live with. I'd like to look at a couple. Once upon a time, I was sitting in the cafeteria at Cal State LA, Los Angeles, trying to write a talk on time use I had to give at BSU that afternoon. And I was a director in the area, and I was sitting there at a table all by myself, minding my own business, writing a good talk on time use. The fellow came up and sat down at my table. There were all kinds of other tables he could have set up, but he sat at mine. So I assumed he wanted to chat, and I wanted to be civil. He'll be kind. So I said, hello, and he said, hello. And he asked me what I was doing, and I said, I'm writing a talk for a group. And he said, well, what kind of talk is it? I said, well, it's a talk on the use of time, proper use of time. He said, well, who are you doing it for? I said, a Christian group on campus called Baptist Student Union. He said, well, I don't believe in God. I personally felt like, well, you know, this is going to ruin my whole day. And I've got to get this talk done. I'm not interested in this right now. And so I said, well, you know, that's really interesting. He said, well, I just think Christianity And the whole God thing is just totally illogical. So I decided the Lord had some kind of an appointment here. So I said, well, that really is interesting. I said, you don't believe in God? He said, no. I said, how did mankind come about then? See, belief in God is tied to who man is. So I said, how did man come about? He said, well, evolution. There just always was matter. There always was time. And so over time, with chance, you know, he didn't say it this way, but that's what he said, the result. Things just gradually evolved into mankind. I said, well, what's your understanding of who man is? He said, well, man's an animal. He's sort of like, I said, would you say he's a biochemical machine? He said, yes, that's exactly what I would say. I said, he's a machine then. Very complex, but a machine. He said, yes. I said, he's sort of on the same order of other machines then. He said, yes. I said, like plants, yes, animals, yes. I said, like vacuum cleaners. But he is a machine, just like a vacuum cleaner. He said, yes. I said, you know, there's nothing wrong with unplugging a vacuum cleaner, is there? He said, no. I said, what if I find some other biochemical machine inconvenient in my situation and I unplug it? Is there anything wrong with it? He said, well, I guess not. I said, what do you think about morals and ethics? Because your belief in God is tied to the basis for all morals and ethics. He said, well, I think morals are culturally relative. You know, I said, so, you know, in some societies one thing is wrong, and in some other societies another thing is wrong. He said, yes. And I said, well, that's really interesting. I said, so if the culture believes it's okay, then it's okay. He said, yes. I said, then was it right for Hitler to burn 6 million Jews? I said, he had the approval of at least the leadership of the culture. Boy, that really hurt. You know, you start talking about genocide. I mean, there are things that go on deep inside of us that just cry out against that. And that hurt. And you could see it in the guy's eyes. He looked at me, tried to look at me real level. He said, well, I guess there's not. Now, I noticed a ring on his hand. Your belief in God is very closely tied, and your belief about man and morals is very closely tied to the persons that are related to you and their welfare. I saw a ring on his hand. I said, you're married? He said, yes. I said, how long have you been married? He said, 2 years. I said, you really care for your wife? He said, yes, I do. I said, suppose you're sitting at home one evening, because, you know, you have said that you believe these things. Suppose you're sitting at home one evening reading the paper, and your wife's sitting there maybe knitting or sewing on something, and you're just sort of being quiet for a little bit, and somebody breaks in the front door. And here's a guy who comes in. He throws your wife on the floor and rapes her, and then he pulls out a knife and starts carving her up into little pieces. I said, now, if that situation occurred, you might get angry, but the reason you would be getting angry is because there is a set of unpleasant stimuli that's stimulating the biochemical machine. You wouldn't get angry because something wrong is going on, because this really would not be wrong, you know. Now, not ultimately wrong. Now, the society may not feel it's right, but it's not anything ultimately wrong. It's just an unpleasant set of stimuli that have been legally decreed to be wrong. That's all that's going on. And he looked at me, and his pupils went zink. And he said, I guess it wouldn't be wrong. See, he's trying to be logical, because that is logic. I said, you're lying. I said, in your heart of hearts, right now, what's going on? I can see it in your face, in your heart of hearts. You're crying out, it's wrong, it's wrong. I said, but you do not have a reason for it to be wrong. Something other than merely illegal or unpleasant. You don't have a reason for it to be wrong. I said, but I do. I said, I know it's wrong because God has made people significant, and God says that that kind of thing is wrong. And he looked at me and he said, well, I'm not converted. I said, well, no, you don't look converted. I didn't. He didn't. I said, but you know, you don't have an intellectual objection to Christianity any longer because it's illogical. Because you yourself cry out in your heart, this thing is wrong, and yet your brain has to say, no, it's not. I said, you're more illogical than it is. I've at least got a reason why it'd be wrong for your wife to be destroyed. So, beliefs are tied very closely on into our lives. We tend just to affirm the big thing and not follow the pieces of the net. People who don't believe in God have to explain some things. They have to explain why their heart moves a certain way. For instance, people who don't have to believe in God have to explain why personality is significant. You know, if all that ever happened was that the atoms of the universe sort of banged around over a time period, gradually this thing emerged called man, and man is merely a machine, then why do we act like personality is significant? Like people are different. Why do we do that? Well, because man is the noblest machine there is. Well, who set up the scale of noble? You know, who says that man's noble? I mean, all we have is man saying, I am noble. I mean, that doesn't make him noble. Now, who said so? As a matter of fact, you tend to end up with personality being really out of place in the universe and people becoming merely machines. Now, I know, as a Christian, I know why man is significant. I know why personality is significant. And we don't treat people like vacuum cleaners. And the reason is because God has made man in his image. He himself is personal. God's personal. And he's made man in his image. And man is important. But if you start with no God, it's hard to come up with an important man, important mankind. Or why noble ideals are significant. If someone doesn't believe in God, then what is justice? And why should anyone pursue it? What is justice? Well, justice, I guess, is treating people right. Well, you know, we cry out for justice. We lobby in international politics so that there might be justice in distant lands. What is justice? I guess justice comes out to be a set of pleasant stimuli for everybody who's being stimulated. Maybe that's about the best we can say about it. But saying everybody ought to have pleasant stimuli is not quite on the same noble level as proclaiming there ought to be justice. Somehow we feel that justice is really important. Why should it be pursued? Well, if we didn't have justice, man, society would fall apart. Well, it doesn't fall apart in dictatorships that aren't just. It continues to function. That ain't nice, except for the dictator, of course. But it does continue to function. What about mercy? What is mercy? If there is no God, then what is mercy and why should anyone pursue it? You know, we have been a merciful society. We are people who take care of individuals who are retarded or have learning disabilities. We are people who've taken care of the sick. We've taken our veterans from the wars and we've tried to help them. Generally, that has been the flavor of our society. There are some cultures that are rather cruel in their treatment of people. But that's been the flavor of our society. It's a big thing for us, the idea of mercy. And yet, if there is no God, mercy sort of evaporates. What is mercy? You know, why not turn off inconvenient machines? You know, if the person has a deficient mental ability, it takes money to support them. Why not turn them off? If the child is inconvenient, going to bring some stress in the situation, why not turn it off? If the unborn child is inconvenient, why not turn it off? Before we can really see that it's turned on. Why not turn off old people? You know, people who are no longer able to work as fast. Why not turn them off? You can follow the sequence through Nazi Germany of the euthanasia of the mentally deficient, and then the work deficient, and then the whole class of Jewish people. You can follow the progression in it. As the root in who God is was lost, the fruit of irrationality without mercy began to flower. What is mercy? Why pursue it? I think personally that loss of who God is one of the reasons why the drive in our own land for the termination of children and weak people is beginning to build. What is faithfulness? If there is no God, what is faithfulness? Why pursue it? I mean, you know, if you got a contract, the contract costs money, and you got the opportunity to get out of the contract and just leave the other guy holding the bag, why not do it? Well, you know, whenever that starts, society does begin to disintegrate. But if you can get away with it, you just go ahead. Yet, we talk about different service organizations in the community, talk about faithfulness and justice and all these things. What about beauty? What is beauty? Beauty becomes just sort of what sort of pleasantly stimulates me, and that's all beauty becomes. Art itself tends to degenerate into sort of decoration or a set of pleasant stimuli. Art loses its meaning. If there is no God, a lot of things, as you follow the line of thought, a lot of things begin to come apart that we cry over as a nation. Justice, mercy, loyalty, faithfulness, and beauty. Why beautify the parks? Well, everybody won't be as stimulated if we don't beautify the parks. You'd have a hard time getting a bill through on those kinds of words. Have a hard time getting a loan floated. Becky Pippert talks about this. A fellow read me this out of her book. Whenever she says that a prof was talking about how insignificant man was, how man was merely a little bit of protoplasm here on an insignificant planet in an insignificant part of the universe. And he talks about how man is nothing, and then on toward the end of the class, he expresses some concern over his runaway daughter and how that's really, really hard on him. And so she asks him, why are you so concerned over mere protoplasm? See, we just sort of, we don't follow out our conclusions and the way they affect us personally. The person who doesn't believe in God has to explain why there's a basis, why there's some basis to morals other than might makes right. Now, you know what might makes right means? It means the biggest, what is right is this. What the biggest bully on the block says is right. You know, where does an 800-pound gorilla sleep? Any place he wants to. Okay? What the biggest mob or the biggest bully says is right. That's what's right. The person who doesn't believe in God's got to explain why there's a basis for morals other than might makes right. See, if there's no God, then there's no one to say ultimately what's right or wrong. No ultimate word on it. What's right is what the culture or the country says. That's the next logical move. Very interesting that Gandhi crusaded against the burning of child widows. Though the whole culture thought it was right, the little 9-year-old who was betrothed to another 9-year-old, if the boy died, they burned his body and his widow on the funeral pyre. Gandhi crusaded against that. It was really interesting. The whole culture thought it was right, but Gandhi didn't. So right or wrong tend to become, if there is no God, and just the society determines what's right or wrong, right or wrong then tend to become merely legal or illegal. Things are just legal or illegal. Not really right or wrong, they're just legal or illegal. And you can get something changed to legal different ways, like by majority vote. The big group forces a small group to accept. Or by a strong man or some strong men who take over power and say, now this is going to be right. But you know, it doesn't matter what our nation makes right or what the majority votes as right. Homosexuality used to be unthinkable in the Christian realm. By manipulation of the media and some other things, we're now to the point that that's a, quote, alternative lifestyle in certain parts of the U.S. There might be other things that come on that we can get put in the category of legal. But it doesn't matter for somebody who understands that God really is there. It doesn't matter what we make up as right or wrong. God has already spoken. And he said a final word. And no matter what society says, there is a basis for morals that cuts across all societies. Now, you know, there are different cultural ways of doing things. I sat down in a Vietnamese restaurant the other day, and it was a good restaurant, so they didn't have forks. I requested one. I can't handle the chopsticks yet. Which is right, forks or chopsticks? You know, it all depends on what you can use. You know, that changes from culture to culture, but the worth of persons does not. God has said some things about that. So, the person who wants no God has got several things to explain. Things that his heart cries for, but he can't find a reason for. Francis Schaeffer says, if you read some of his writings, that if a man says there is no God, now catch this, if a man says there is no God, then the more logical he becomes, the less of a human being he becomes. Head goes into tension against heart. Now, Schaeffer suggests that you have actually a service to perform for people. And I'd like to suggest this to you also. You have a service to perform to help people understand the implications of their beliefs. Not to sort of go out as, God squad with your grease gun of answers to all possible questions and just do people up. Not with that mentality. But to go as a servant to people and help them understand the implications of what they are saying they believe. Schaefer says what we need to do is start with where a person is, which is like with a graduate student, where I started. He said that there was no God, you know, fine. And then to step by step help him find what that statement means for mankind and for morals, for things like truth and beauty. And then to make those things, even beyond that, to make them, a third step, personal. What that means for his own personal world. Like I did with the guy by asking him a question about his wife. He says it's sort of like you start where a person is, and you lead them step by step, you push them step by step to the edge of the cliff, where they stand and they see that if they go ahead and say yes, they become inhuman. And then he says, you push them over. Then you make them make the final choice. Now you leave them with a question that they must answer. This is actually a service to people. People need to be loved. We don't need to be out trying to browbeat people or corner them or anything like that. People need to be loved. But you yourself need to clarify your thinking. We're going to conclude here. But I'd like to challenge you with a couple of things. You yourself need to clarify your thinking. Whenever I was going through all this stuff about, you know, who is God and where is he and what all is going on, I had bought all kinds of things that didn't fit together. And I thought I was a really intelligent chemistry major. You know, chemistry majors are very intelligent people. And I thought I was a really intelligent chemistry major. And I listened to my chemistry profs and I listened to other people. And I had bought this whole bag, man. And it was a grab bag. All kinds of stuff in there. Now, this whole bag of ideas, I had never sorted through them. Now, I would challenge you personally to be intellectually honest enough to sit down and sort through some of your big ideas. If you have some big ideas, especially if they contradict the scripture, sort through them. But go ahead and sort through all your other big ideas. You're free to. That book, The Universe Next Door, would really help you. Clear up your own thinking. You got a mixed bag. I'm still finding out what mine is. And I'm correcting the ideas. You know, I'm trying to take those thoughts captive and straighten them out. Clear up your own thinking. The Universe Next Door would be a good one. And then learn to serve other people. Don't learn to abuse other people. You know, here comes the intellectual bruiser walking up the street looking for a victim to pounce on and just pound his head into the ground. Whoa! Answer this question. Whoa! Answer this question. Don't take that attitude toward people. You know, God doesn't like people abused. You need to take the attitude of a servant, but you do need to be bold. You need to serve people by helping them clarify their thinking. So I'd like to challenge you to do that. Why do you believe what you believe? Well, all of us have to depend on teachers. It's a good thing we got friends. Man, if we all had to have an apple fall on our head before we could learn something about gravity, I mean, it would be a rough life. If everybody had to start off reinventing the wheel before you could own an automobile, life would really be rough. It's good that we have an educational process. It's good that there are teachers and friends and a fund of media we can draw from. But don't draw uncritically. Evaluate the thoughts you're getting. And then second, do some homework. Do some homework in order to be a servant to people. Used to, whenever people say, I don't believe in God, I would cringe and go into terror. Ah, I hope you don't ask me any questions, man. Well, I learned that the person who says that usually has not seriously thought through the implications of what they believe. I've learned I need to be a servant to help them draw out those conclusions and see what they're really saying about life so that they can critically evaluate that position and consider the alternative of Jesus Christ. I'd like to challenge you to learn to serve others by helping them clarify. Here's a good book, How to Be Your Own Selfish Pig. Have any of you read it? Yeah, one of you. It really is a book. It really is a book. It's not the kind of book you give one of your friends, you know. Here's a book you ought to read. How to Be Your Own Selfish Pig. What do you think about me, man? Well, it's a really good book. She goes through, in the books, Frances Schaefer's daughter, her name is Macaulay, M-A-C-A-U-L-A-Y, I think. M-A-C-A-U-L-A-Y. She's Frances Schaefer's daughter, and she's worked for years and years trying to help people in England clarify their thinking. And the book is very entertainingly written, but it'll help you get hold of some of the basic ideas and begin to trace them out practically in a form that you can use them to help others. It'll both help you and it'll help others. I've talked about the need to help people understand their presuppositions and the meanings of those things, and then to share with people what it means whenever you know Jesus Christ. There are difficulties in believing in the God of the Bible. There are some intellectual difficulties. I personally, in my own research, from what I've come up with, there is one more difficulty in believing that he's not there. There's another level of difficulty if you believe he's not intellectually. Now, you can check that out yourself. Your beliefs are important. They shape the direction of your life. The beliefs of your friends are important. And the individuals who have the beliefs are so important that someone came from eternity and died for them. So, as you are around very valuable people who hold beliefs that are going to affect their eternal destiny, but not only eternal destiny, the quality of life they have in this existence, I challenge you to be a servant to them and learn enough to help them clarify